Please be seated. Well, I'm sure there's going to be a priest or two who will stand up this morning and say something like, "Well, this will never happen again. Epiphany Sunday in the year 2020. 2020 vision." Maybe even suggesting a church theme song like, "I Can See Clearly Now." Some might even hum the first few lines. "I can see clearly." No. Of course, I would never, never do that. Never be tempted. But from what I wouldn't do to what I have done, and maybe some of you have had the privilege as well, I remember the first time standing in the desert area of Palestine, the East Bank, if you will, and looking up into the Middle Eastern sky right near Bethlehem. It was an October night in 1983, and I was really blown away by the clarity, the brightness, and of course with the lack of electric light all around, the innumerable multitude of stars in the sky. And it, of course, reminds you when you experience something like that, for most of human existence, tens of thousands of years, except for the last 100 years, in select urbanized centers flooded with electric light, humans have never forgotten to look up and have never failed to be in awe of what they see in the night sky. Many of the ancients developed the study of the stars as science, as religion, and as art. The very creative constellations that they came up with. They believed that the whole world, that all of creation, was interconnected. And when something important happened on Earth, one could reasonably expect that that would be reflected in the heavens, and vice versa. And that is, of course, the root of astrology, both ancient and modern. Interestingly enough, though most scientists today who study the heavens are not convinced astrologers, and neither am I, they do believe, again, in the interconnectedness of all things via physics, via quantum physics in particular. Scholars have labored to discern what the star mentioned in the story of the Magi might have been. Was it Halley's Comet? Probably not, because that occurred in about 12 or 11 BC. Was it some other kind of comet that we don't know about? Or might it have been some conjunction of Jupiter and Saturn? That's one theory. Sometimes they conjoin or they overlap in their light. Jupiter was considered a royal star, and Saturn was sometimes thought to represent the Jews. The overlap of the two might have meant to some serious astrologers that a king of the Jews had been born. Now, we don't know for sure if one of these scenarios is correct or partly correct. It's probably some combination of some celestial event and then the interpretive, the more mystical interpretation of that event that caused the Magi to take their journey. That would explain how they could see things like a star stopping over a house, etc. We're not sure exactly what happened. But we know this, that Matthew doesn't tell us this story to just satisfy our astronomical curiosity. And nor does Matthew offer up the cozy creche scene you can see here on my right. Maybe you've seen other ones, maybe you have one in your house. Augmented by gentle, oriented princes coming and kneeling beside a child in a stable. Matthew doesn't say anything about a stable. And by the time these visitors arrive, Matthew also doesn't call them royalty. Mary and Joseph were probably just residing somewhere in Bethlehem. There's mention of a house. The overtones of this story are actually quite different than the romantic portrayal. There is political dynamite in what follows. And because it's political, there is personal challenge in it for us as well. The house of Herod, with which our passage starts, whether the old Herod who died right around the time of Christ's birth, or his sons who continued to occupy that place, the place of power and the throne throughout Jesus' life, they were, as most Jews knew, imposters and pretenders, imposed on the Jewish nation through a series of shady economic and political backroom deals with Rome. And most of the people knew it, but the elites and the bureaucrats had made an uneasy peace with them as long as they themselves were supported by the king. And you know, it's the same sort of uneasy peace that exists between those with power and economic clout in every society at any time, including our own country. It's how this bipedal mammal has always organized. Over the break, the Christmas break, I was watching The Irishman, the movie on Netflix, directed by Martin Scorsese. Pretty violent, so I'm not really recommending it if you're squeamish about that sort of stuff. It's the movie about the Teamsters, Jimmy Hoffa, and the mobster who some claim killed him, Frank Sheeran. And you realize, of course, that the structures I've been describing with Herod and the Israelite nation, which I'm claiming are part of every society, are even part of those structures that are supposed to protect the little guy, the average worker. Every bipedal mammal association ends up in some form or another of corruption. Without being too dramatic about it, one could name any place at any time, put a colon after it, and the words unjust society, and you'd not be wrong. So Judah, yes, circa 2 AD, unjust society. Canada, colon, unjust society. Abbotsford or Chilliwack, colon, unjust society. Though, of course, you'll not hear that at the mayor's prayer breakfast. Now, I don't mean to cast dispersions, and we must, of course, recognize that such things come in degrees. But I think we need to be honest about it. And I think that's one of the first epiphany awakenings we need. We're called to be critiquers of society, participants in a positive manner, but we have to first of all open our eyes to what is there. And because of Christmas, because of the birth we celebrate, we recognize that it is precisely into these sorts of circumstances that Christ, that God, comes. God's not afraid of our corruption, in other words. And when we dare to see clearly, you'll forgive me for that, to stop pretending that everything is okay, when we dare open our epiphany eyes, we can view what is and still view it with hope, be filled with hope, new hope. So the arrival of the astrologers, who were not Jewish, introduces us to something that Matthew wants us to be clear about from the start, the large-scale political message of the gospel. Jesus, just because he is the king of the Jews, is not limited in his rule to any particular ethnic group. This, Matthew wants to say, is the beginning of the spread of God's peace and justice to the whole world in fulfillment of the ancient prophecies, first of all to Abram and Sarai, applying, of course, then to everything that is unjust in our world. And Matthew will end his gospel on the most political of notes by extending this vision infinitely, by telling us that Jesus commissioned his first followers, and therefore you and I, to go into the world and make followers of himself. Now, this is a supercharged challenge for post-Christendom society, for multicultural society. We want, don't we, God's peace and justice. We love that little peace and justice. It just sounds so good. But we want it to somehow just happen. As if it's just going to drop on us, just appear. But the New Testament knows only one way toward this goal. There must be at least significant bands of thoughtful, engaged followers of this King, this Jesus, in every place and within every ethnic and cultural expression. But how does that differ then from colonization or colonialization, from cultural genocide, from hiding all of our significant differences, some of them very salutary, across religions, across worldviews? All great questions with no easy answers. I, for one, find myself almost caught on the horns of a dilemma. I can't find the classic conservative answer helpful anymore. I find it highly problematic. Just convert the heathen, conform everyone to the same belief system, and everything will be okay. We've tried that. We've been trying it for 2,000 years, and often it ends up very badly. But, on the other side, I frankly can't buy the classic liberal line, just live and let live. Everyone's got their own way of doing things. Yes, they do, and that's the problem. Because beliefs matter. Beliefs have an impact. Besides, liberals believe that we should change people's belief systems on any number of issues. Just ask them. Ask me. Probably consider myself one of them. Whatever else it might mean, the spreading of Christ's light and vision is political. It's about a vision of God's justice and peace becoming more visible in all societies, and that challenge lands on each person's doorstep, on my doorstep. And so personally for me, it's about opening our eyes, opening my eyes again. Whenever saints are portrayed, and you can see this on the front of your bulletin, where the wise men are portrayed, their eyes are wide and their eyes are big. Saints are people who dare to see God's truth when most people just want to shut their eyes and just say, I'm not seeing it, I'm not going to pay attention. Perhaps it means opening our hearts and our eyes to learn from each other in unexpected ways. The way these incredible men from the East did. And the more I think about these guys, the more I'm impressed. The more I think about what they did and how they did it, the more I'm challenged and I'm moved by them. So much so that in this past week, I was starting to reimagine them in my mind as the iconic saints of Western Christendom. What do I mean by that? Well, almost all sociologists agree that it's not the downtrodden, the persecuted, or the marginalized that are difficult to motivate. If given a chance, they will act. They will act in their own self-interest if empowered to do so. The hardest people to change, the least likely to engage in adventure, and I'm not talking about a European holiday here, the least likely to embrace deep personal change at risk to themselves are most of us here in this room, the comfortable. And I include myself, the comfortable. This is what sunk the Roman Empire. They didn't have the people power anymore, the people who wanted to go out and defend the borders. And so the borders became porous, and eventually it collapsed from within. And it this very same problem sinks the Western church in our own day. We love our creature comforts, our little hobbit homes, our cups of tea, and our gaslit fireplaces. Volunteer a couple of hours a week with those less fortunate? That's for someone else. Ask myself hard questions about what needs to change in my character, That sounds like work. Develop my spirituality? That's probably going to cut into my golf time or my Netflix time. But here were wealthy men, comfortable men. If the gifts they gave tell us anything, if the journey they went on with all its expenses gives us clues, and yet they put themselves in harm's way for the sake of the truth, for the sake of the divine call to discover again, for the sake of taking their part in participating with God's desire for the light to spread. And so they overcame, with God and each other's help, this sinkhole of creature comforts. So, I was being inspired by them this week because there's hope for me then. I like my comforts as much as the next guy, the next gal. And so there's hope for all of us, actually. It also tells us, of course, that we don't truly see. Our eyes are not truly opened until we act. The Magi saw something, but their sight would never have been fulfilled unless they embarked on their journey. And our courageous journeys in 2020 may take many forms. They may include reaching out from our comforts toward others, maybe family members who are suffering, or friends, or neighbors. We know we should help. We remember the Good Samaritan. It may be journeys, and they may be journeys in which we engage with pressing issues with new urgency, possibly climate change, seriously reimagining what it might mean to live more in tune with our Earth's pain. You could, I'm sure, if I polled this room, name many courageous journeys. Not one of them will be comfortable. At least at first. But in the end, these journeys bring incalculable meaning and the knowledge that we too are becoming wise people, spreading the light. So then, how will you journey this year? What route will you take to come to Him? Will you dialogue with friends and fellow parishioners about it? The Magi needed each other, and so do we. I might suggest reading a book like Givers and Takers. I can't remember the name of it right now, but it's a powerful book that I've been reading. It's on my computer. Why does my 55-year-old brain not remember the author? But anyway, wonderful book to discuss with your children as well. What does it mean to live well in our kind of society in a way that gives and receives? The journey will only mean something if you bring your best to it. Signified in our story by the preparation, by the commitment, and by the gifts the Magi brought. How will you know it's the right journey? You will find Him. You will find Him, and you will be filled with awe. You will be alive. Amen.